Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses, and I do it for an audience of real entrepreneurs. And you know it because so many people who I interview now are people who've listened to interviews and then come back and say, here's what I did, often while listening to Mixergy. And I'm just also beyond doing these interviews. I'm a fan of business. And so I read stories about business as much as possible, and I can't get enough of it. And one of my favorite is a book called The Everything Store, about the founding of Amazon. And there were a few jaw-dropping moments in there, like the story of diapers.com in there. To be honest, I knew that Amazon had purchased diapers.com. I didn't realize how big the business got. I didn't realize that it got so big that Amazon was threatened by it. I didn't realize all the things that went behind the scenes to try to suppress diapers' growth. And I've been in awe of that company ever since. I don't know what led to this interview, but I'm incredibly excited that I get to interview one of the two co-founders of the company behind diapers.com. He is Vineet Barrera. In 2004, along with his close childhood friend, he created the company behind diapers.com and sold it soon after to Amazon. Today, Vinny, as he likes to be called, is back with a new company. It's called Some Spider Studios. I'll be honest with you, I wanted to introduce it as a content company because I saw the video of this, like, this 2-minute video that went viral on YouTube of a dad who is basically experiencing what I experienced. Tons of people saw it. It blew up. I thought that's what he created, the company behind that, to create more videos like that. I saw his podcast, which frankly, Vinny, has better audio quality than mine because you guys are super pros. You landed great people to lead it, and I thought that's what you were going to do. And instead, when I told Vinny that that's how I was going to introduce his new company, he said, no, that's not it. I said, what is it? And he started to explain to me, Andrew, content is a component of it. It's also about community. If you are a dad who identifies with this video, we want to create a community of other dads like that for you. And since we know commerce, we're going to start selling you stuff too. And so there's much more to it. I invited him here to talk about what he did to rattle the giants in e-commerce and how he did it well. And also what he's doing now to, not rattle me, but really to excite me as a content creator. I want to see where he's going with it. This interview is sponsored by two companies. You guys know about them because I talk about them so much. I'll do a quick HostGator and TopTal. In fact, I'll tell you more about them later. First, Vinny, welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
The numbers that I heard were, I'm going to start straight with the numbers, $500 million in cash is what Amazon paid for your company, plus they assume some debt. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay. You took a sigh as I said that. Do you feel uncomfortable talking about money?
No. I just is going back a few years now, and people like to say it was a $545 million deal. So I think you broke it down in ways that some people haven't. So
yeah, Wikipedia even had, I was looking for the data. I think they had $585 million. So the numbers are a little bit out there. It's interesting to hear you explain the details of it. And I'm glad that you didn't say that I got that wrong. And you and your co-founder in that business, Mark Lohr, you guys were friends going how far back?
We grew up together in the Jersey Shore, and he came down from Staten Island when he was 10. So he attended my school. So it was fifth grade is how long we've known each other.
And were you guys entrepreneurial even back then? I heard a story about Topps, the trading baseball cards company. What was it that you guys did with them?
Yeah. So in the late 90s, we created a company called thepit.com. Mark, also another childhood friend called Lax. So the three of us. And it was a sports car, a stock market for sports cards. So we used to say where eBay meets E-Trade meets ESPN. And this was back in late 90s when eBay had taken off, E-Trade had taken off. And that got some traction. And we sold that to the Topps company, the sports card.
And there was no outside funding in that. Oh, no, there was. Series A funding, right?
It was all angels. I think it was something like 50 angels that we had raised money from. And there was one small fund. But and then market had crashed, if you recall, 2001. So we had raised our money beforehand and then sold it right before 9/11, 2 weeks before 9/11. And we actually were able to return all of our investors, all of their money, which at the time, since the stock market, NASDAQ had dropped 70%, was one of the biggest wins. And so that was actually what catapulted us with diapers.com, because we were able to go back to the same investors.
Was the idea that you guys were holding on to the cards at the pit, or that I would get it and trade it back and forth?
Yeah, so it's a great question. Very few people ask me about the details. What we were doing was, at the time, sports cards had become more commodified. So a big issue, before they had come up with this grading system where you could trade these things like commodities, once that had happened, we could create this market where we would take inventory of the product and users could open up an account, not have to take inventory when they bought these cards. And so they would buy and sell these athletes like stock. And so you would see someone back then, there was a lot of great quarterbacks, Culpepper and McNabb, and you could day trade. And we held the inventory in our office. It didn't have to take possession, and you'd see extraordinary gains and losses during the day. So it was a little bit like gambling, a little bit like fantasy, and so it was a lot of fun.
I'm looking at an old screenshot of the site, and you really it not only does it look like the stock market, where yeah. I could see the current buy and the current sell price for each one and a percentage change for the day, but it seems like you guys even gave them ticker symbols to make it easier to display data.
We tried to do everything. We had a ticker symbols. We had a ticker, on the bottom. We had graphs with player performance. Anything we could to resemble sort of a CNBC for sports mm-hmm. fans. This was before, you had the fan duels and all this other stuff. So I think we were onto something, and then, the market crashed.
It wasn't just the dot-com market that crashed. It was also the trading card market that didn't take off anymore. It was huge in the 80s. It was big in the 90s. It feels like in the 2000s, it didn't have the same spirit.
Yeah. Well, remember we did this in the late, so it was 1999. We sold it in 2001. So I didn't follow the market after that, but we were leasing a lot of traction. We were also introducing a lot of non-sports cards fans into this market because they didn't even necessarily care about the cards. Right? They just wanted to trade their athletes.
Yep.
The way that was legal.
Right. I didn't think of it as a trading your athletes approach. Okay. All right. So I get it. You stayed at Topps for a while for 3-4 years?
We stayed there until 2005. Actually, no, you know what? We stayed there until the fall of 2006. We wound up launching diapers.com in 2005, but we were doing nights and weekends.
Nights and weekends. And this is because Mark was, as I understand it, actually, where did the idea come from? Tell me about the wedding that led to this.
Oh, you heard about the wedding. Yeah. So I was getting married in 2003. And we always knew after we sold the Pit that we would want to go back and do something again. It was the best experience of our lives, starting a business as friends, having control, autonomy with what you do. And we had to just wait our time to find out when the next opportunity arose. And so we would do research here and there while at Topps. And then I was getting married and a big Indian wedding here in New York. And we would have this bus. We had this bus that was going to transport all of my friends and family, the ones that were in New York, to an event in New Jersey. And so that was a Friday night. We had a ceremony and we had another one on Saturday. And so apparently on that Friday night bus that Mark was on, he told all my friends about this new idea he had, which was to sell diapers over the internet. Cause he actually had a baby at the time. I was getting married. He had a baby. And then when I came back from my honeymoon, that's when I found out more details.
And I get it. When you have a baby, you realize how many diapers you need. You also realize that going to the store is really a chore, especially considering that you don't know which diaper size, you don't know when you run out because you're a new parent, you don't expect it. But the world, the online world, wasn't what it is today. What was it like to buy diapers online at the time?
So at the time, really, very few people were doing it. So you're talking about before we launched.
At the time when he came up with this idea with you and were listening. Yeah. And imagine he also talked to other wedding attendees and said, what do you think of this?
Yeah, exactly. People thought it was crazy. Yeah, exactly. People thought it was crazy. But I think part of the point was that it was not being sold online. There was nobody else doing it except for Amazon. And Amazon was doing it in a very small way. So it wasn't a big part of their business. And so if you wanted to buy diapers, you couldn't really order them online in any reasonable way where you might need them the next day because it's an emergency. No one delivered it that way, or the cost was so expensive because of the shipping. There was no market for buying diapers or really any essentials online in a reasonable way. The only other thing that was out there was drugstore.com, and again, they were really not focused on diapers. So we were really kind of, I think, breaking new ground.
When you think about an idea like this, are you firing up spreadsheets? Are you working out the numbers? Are you that type of an entrepreneur, or are you just feeling an opportunity and you want to chase it?
Both. Highly analytical. Mark, especially at the time, extremely, he comes with a finance background. And so we would do a bunch of analytical modeling. But then at the end of the day, obviously, that's just models. You got to get out and try it. And so we did it in a lightweight way to start to see if there was any customer traction.
The lightweight way seems to have kind of learned from 1-800-CONTACTS, which was taking the world by storm at the time. I think they were getting sued because could you actually be selling contacts online? They were, and they were making a lot of headway. And so you thought, we're going to do the same thing. And originally the company was 1-800-DIAPERS. Is that right?
It was. So the first thing we did was we bought the phone number, or technically you're not actually able to buy phone numbers, but we got control of the phone number. It's 7 letters, DIAPERS. So it makes sense. Like, for example, 1-800-MATTRESS, it's actually 8. They had their advertisement leave off the S. So 1-800-DIAPERS, we got the phone number, we got the domain name, and then in a very simple way, we just started selling a few limited SKUs, diapers and wipes, to start.
To who?
So to the world, meaning we put up the website, and I think this, as people know, we weren't able to buy the diapers from the manufacturers, because you need 2 years of operating history to start. And so you know, obviously day one, you couldn't do that. So we had to go to the Costco's and the BJ's to buy the inventory. And in the beginning, it was very small. You know, it wasn't a big deal. We didn't think this was, we hired a stay-at-home mom to do the fulfillment and the customer service. Didn't think this was necessarily going to be some huge obstacle, because the volume we thought was going to be small, which it was in the very early days. And we just put it up, you know, on the web and did some Google search ads. And in the beginning, we got some orders in, made sure that the whole thing worked. It was only, and I'm trying to remember when it kind of started taking off. It was maybe about, I don't know, 8-9 months, maybe 6 months into it, five, six months into it, where there was a mention in a magazine called Baby Talk. And I can get into the story, but that's when it took off.
Tell me, I'm here for your stories.
Yeah. So I remember, we were doing a few orders a day. Remember, this is nights and weekends. I'm still general counsel at the Topps company. And I was married now, and I'm on a trip down to Georgetown University. My wife went to Georgetown. So we're going down there for the weekend, and I decide, she takes me to the library, and I decide to check the orders. You know, what's going on? It's a Saturday. And I go into our intranet at the time to see what was going on with the volume. And I see that it had completely taken off, which for us was a few hundred orders. And, obviously very exciting. Concerns were coming out. Could we handle the inventory? What's going to happen to our customer service? And I didn't know, we didn't know why it had taken off. And we found out later that, again, there was a magazine called Baby Talk, which had incredible penetration with new moms. And they had put a little blurb in there, unbeknownst to us, saying, sites or things you should check out. And 1-800-DIAPERS was in there. And that is, kind of really how we took off.
And so I get the offline version. Somebody would read it in a magazine, be able to dial up, find out about diapers, and then have them shipped out. The online component I don't understand at the time. You guys didn't own 800diapers.com, right? Or 1-800diapers.com. What was the 1-800diapers.com was you?
I'm sorry. Yeah, we bought the domain name. So we got the 1-800-DIAPERS domain name, .com domain name, plus the phone number. Sorry, that wasn't...
Okay, you know what? The reason I didn't say it, because I misunderstood you, but because I'm doing like checks in real time. And when I go to 800diapers.com, it takes me to an affiliate link for Amazon and drugstore. But you guys seem to have owned 1-800diapers.com.
Yeah.
And so you were buying ads to 1-800diapers.com. People would see the ad, and then they would dial up or order on the website.
Yeah, it wound up being mostly website even back then, even though we had the phone number and that was important, but it was largely online.
And the lightweight idea is you guys can't get diapers directly delivered from the manufacturers because they don't know you. You've only been around for 2 years. You have a stay-at-home mom who goes to the stores and picks it up in her shopping cart, brings it to her house. When an order comes through, she sees it. She prints out the label, puts the diapers in a box, and ships it.
You got it. You got it.
So the only expense was the phone number and the website.
The only startup cost.
The only startup cost.
Yeah, the only startup cost were the phone number, the website. We did have to obviously create the the website, and so we had to someone that we knew from the pit.com was our software developer, and so he did it for equity, and he was a good close friend of ours. So that didn't really cost us a whole lot of money. And I'm trying to think back then, very little money in marketing. The good thing about buying the inventory from Costco and BJ's, we put it on credit card. And so we didn't have to pay that for 30 days. And so you actually, weren't running through much cash, and the marketing was limited. And as we'll talk about, really, like, the word of mouth is what really catapulted it, after we had that Baby Talk mention, and that's, very low cost.
Yeah. So. Were you doing a lot of heavy online ads? Were you doing any offline promotion? No, it was just moms communicating with each other.
A little bit of SEM at the time, and a referral program we set up, you know, where you get, I think it was $2 off your first order, and then you as the referrer would get $2, and then we amped that up over time. So it was a basic referral program, a little bit of SEM. We got that little PR mention, and then word of mouth.
I have the referral program. Your referrals get $2 on their first order, and you get $1.
Yeah. So what we tried to do, by the way, and what we did do was not only would you as a referrer get a credit when someone you referred ordered, but every time your friend ordered, you would get an additional credit. And so it was sort of saying, it was almost trying to get people to encourage their friends to order from us frequently. So it wasn't just an acquisition tool. And you know, later it got really messy in how that worked. But that was this thing where you get $1 every time your friend ordered.
Yeah, every time there's a big no limits indicator on that. And
oh, this is embarrassing. Just looking at the old stuff.
Print out $2 referral coupons was available.
We saw that too. So everyone would get their own code. They could change the code to something that, you know, was their own name or whatever, and they put it, you know, in their laundry rooms, you know, daycare centers or whatever it is. So people would do that. And then this was at the time that a lot of the message boards, RetailMeNots, got big. And so they would put their codes on, which they're doing now. You see this now all over the place. And so that was a big growth driver.
So, you know what? I am going back in the history of the site to understand it. And one of the things that I saw was from 2004, I think you were selling more than just diapers. You knew to get into wipes. I think you got into baby formula pretty early on, right?
Yeah.
And again, all that stuff, you had to go to BJ's or Costco, buy, put in a truck, put in a van and take home.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it was diapers and wipes to start. And then we added formula a little bit thereafter. And again, you know, we couldn't buy any of this stuff in advance. And so, I mean, we couldn't buy from the manufacturer. So it was simply, you know, going to these stores. And then when it got really started to take off, it got a little crazy because, you know, one store couldn't handle the demand. So now, you know, you'd be sitting there and going, and Mark tells a story, you know, we'd go up and down the East Coast. This was a little bit later on, cleaning out all of their Huggies and Pampers. And with large, you know, $100,000 credit card receipts. And then we had all of our family members, my dad, my brother, Mark's dad and brother, using their credit cards because we'd max out to keep up with the demand. So it was pretty wild.
Wow. How you must have racked up the miles too.
Racked it up. Now remember, a lot of this was on parent, my dad's. So he was getting the points. So, you know, this wasn't all free for him.
You mentioned earlier that it was a Tops money that kind of carried you through the early days of diapers. How much, it seems like you didn't make much on the sale. It was just the nothing, right? Because you had to pay back the investors. It was on your salary there for the few years that you were there.
Yeah. Yes. So we didn't make much money at all. Mark and I, investors got their money back. And then, yeah, we were employees. So just as a normal employee, I became the general counsel, and Mark went on to run one of their units out west. And so, yeah, we were, you know, there was no equity really from that. It was just our salaries. And then we actually, when we quit our jobs finally in 2006 to do diapers full time, we didn't take a salary for a full year.
So I don't know how you guys were able to keep families going, considering that he had a brand new baby and working is enough to make it tough. Working late nights is tougher, and then cutting back on salary.
Yeah. Yeah. That was
it. Remember one challenging moment for you or for him, considering like raising a family while you're doing this?
You mean financial challenge,
anything? Like, frankly, if I have a lot of interviews to do, I get a little stressed. And if my kid's splashing outside of the bath, I get a little frustrated with them instead of saying, don't splash outside.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think for Mark, it was probably a little bit different, but Mark had, he had been in finance for a while. So he had some good savings that he could use. For me, I mean, look, as you know, you talk to all these entrepreneurs every day and all day. Once we quit our jobs and weren't taking a salary, every day was sort of stressful. And I think the most stress was just kind of like, could we deliver the product to our customers on time? Because it was so hard to get the inventory and so hard to coordinate. It was okay with one stay at home mom, but once it started getting out of control, we had to now on a dime open up a fulfillment center in Virginia, and then that didn't work. And then we had to open up one in Connecticut. And so just the stress of basically keeping up with the orders. We didn't really have this other stress, which you see sometimes in startups is, you know, will this work? Meaning I can't get customers. We have to spend a lot of money marketing. You know, how am I going to get traction? It was more like the execution was killing us.
What did you see that they didn't see, that Amazon, that the e-commerce guys didn't see?
I don't know. When you say e-commerce guys, you mean Amazon or just the rest of the world?
There were the drugstores. There were people doing e-commerce at the time. I understand that they were kind of beaten up after the dot-com bomb and were reluctant to do things like ship big bulky items that didn't have a big margin. I get that. But you saw something that they didn't see, that an opportunity that those guys who were already in the space missed. You came in as two outsiders.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question, and it's hard to know what they didn't see. I think what we saw was we saw initial extraordinary customer traction. And so that meant that our marketing cost was very, very low. So we knew that we probably didn't have to spend a lot of money marketing. And then the second thing is we saw a path towards how you could make the margin work. So I think a lot of people were scared off, you know, shipping heavy diapers and wipes because of the pets.com debacle in years earlier. And so we had constructed this model where we knew pretty specifically, you would ask the question about, you know, how analytical we were. And I think we were fairly analytical and modeled out, yes, it's going to be expensive to ship this stuff, but our marketing costs are really low. But if we can get other stuff into the box, you know, this is the high margin baby accessories, clothing, toys, all these other things, the incremental margin there would more than pay, you know, for the low margin we were making in the margin and the diapers, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And then the other thing that I remember reading in that book was that you guys had customized boxes for diapers, which reduced your shipping fees versus others who are doing more general shipping. Am I right in that memory of the book?
I think that's, what we did, we had a whole unit called Special Ops. We called them Special Ops. And, you know, from beginning to end, we focused like a laser on trying to take cost out of the system any way we could. So with our boxing, we created something called Boxum, which was a software that was going to tell the warehouse precisely what the dimensions of the order was going to be. You know, if let's say there's two diaper boxes, you know, one wipe, one formula, exactly what the size of that was, so that we weren't wasting any box space. So now we had, you know, 35 different boxes. So it was nice, better user experience. You used to see boxes come from Amazon at the time where you'd get like one little thing in a big box. Not only is that a terrible user experience, but extraordinarily expensive. So we knew if we were going to play in this game, we had to be really efficient. And so there was a lot of things like that, but you're right about boxes was a key.
You strike me as someone who uses spreadsheets in his personal life. Do you? Do you have an example of like...
No, it's funny you say that. Yeah, that's Mark. I am not a spreadsheet personal life guy, but it's not me. It's actually Mark. But I like the analytics, but I'm not... I actually don't love spreadsheets as much.
What are you on a personal level when you're not doing this? If
what do I like?
Yeah, I'm trying to get a sense of you in business. So you're telling me Mark is the person who would have a spreadsheet. It sounds like maybe for his grades in college or for his household budget when he was starting out. What is it about you what is it that you love about business? How do you express that in your personal life? I'm trying to get a sense of your personality.
Yeah. I think it's a couple of things. One thing, I don't know if this translates to my personal life, but I'm highly analytical. Actually, it definitely does, I guess. I'm thinking about my wife now. Highly analytical. And what I mean, so I'm a lawyer, actually. So I was trained, as a lawyer, as I was saying earlier, as general counsel. And as a lawyer, you got to really be able to analyze the facts, present the facts, relate them to the law, make your case. And so that's my background and training. And when I think about business and I think about how all the dots connect and how we're going to plot out the next 3 to 5 years to make the math work, that's what I love. I love the X's and O's of operations. And at the same time, and I think this is true of Mark also, I really love brand and how to think about emotion and how you can create an emotionally resonant experience with your users, which is very non-analytical, because that's how we took on Amazon, really, when you think about it.
All right, I'm going to come back in a moment and ask you about brand, and then also why this business went from diapers to Quidsy, and about how you grew it and then what you're doing next. Let me take a moment, though, to talk about my sponsor. It's a company called HostGator. And as you were talking about the pit, Vinny, you gave me an idea. Tell me if this would work. Imagine if someone's listening to us, goes to HostGator, creates a hosting account, and says, you know, Vinny's right. People didn't care about the little piece of paper that happened to be baseball cards. They cared about buying and trading their heroes. But you need the cards in order to kind of validate the gambling, what would otherwise be gambling. Could somebody say, I'm going to create a set of baseball cards about, or baseball sports figures and business figures and so on. I'll just inventory them in some place, let people buy and sell them online and say, I'm never going to make more than however many I have. They could buy and trade people like Elon Musk up and down all day long. And if the client ever says, ship it to me, you ship it out, but it'll be shipped as infrequently as possible.
Love it. Absolutely. 100%.
All right. Can you imagine like the Andrew Warner card on this website? Ooh, all right. If anyone out there wants to take that idea or any other idea over to HostGator.com and get their site hosted, I urge you to get the discount from them. Not because, frankly, they already offer a lower price. My people have enough money that they don't care about the extra few percentage points off. So why would they use the URL that I'm about to give them? Because it gives me credit for sending them over and it helps my podcast out. So if you're looking to have your website hosted or you hate your current hosting company and want to switch, go check out HostGator.com/Mixergy. HostGator.com/Mixergy. And really, for what it's worth, you will find that they have the lowest price on that URL of anywhere. HostGator.com/Mixergy. Vinny, why'd you switch to Quidsy?
Why did we switch the name?
Yeah, because you started to see a bigger vision. What was the bigger vision?
Yeah. So we knew right from the outset that the diapers, the wipes, and the formula were the kind of marketing tactic to get customers into the door and to basically be the anchor for the frequency. It was the reason why people had to come back. And so that was very, very effective, but very low margin in that. So the whole margin game was going to be, how do we add selection, right? How much more stuff can we sell these moms? And that's one thing, you know? And then the other thing was our special sauce was specialization. So we were not, the way we were taken on Amazon, it was all about the category that we were operating in, whether it was baby products or something else, the curation, the user experience, that was the other differentiation for us. So when we talked about how we were going to grow, we knew we needed to add selection to increase the LTV of our customers. And we knew we had to keep the specialization. So the idea was we're going to need to create additional websites. So diapers.com was the first, but if we were going to sell them, which was the next thing we wanted to sell them was other household essentials, you know, toilet paper, cleaning supplies, all that stuff. We couldn't really do that under the diapers.com name, we thought. So we created something called soap.com. And then we wound up creating, you know, wanted to do toys, and we wound up creating yo-yo.com, and wanted to do pets, and it was wag.com. And so all of these brands were related, but we needed to come up with a new parent company name to represent all these brands. So we came up with Quidsy, and Quidsy was really an internal name, wasn't really meant for consumers. We wanted it to mean something. And so in Latin, Quidsy is what if. And so that was why.
Why not united under one big brand that is, and we're seeing some people do that. I think Brandless is starting to do something like that. Why not pursue one big brand name that combines it all, that stands for family or stands for something? As a branding guy, I think it's important to bring that up.
It's a huge question. We had endless debates about this. I mean, huge debates at the company until we left. And, you know, there's one argument is that, as I said, that, you know, each brand, the shopping occasion, if you try to put, you know, toys under diapers, and we did have toys under diapers.com, you weren't going to be able to capture as much share as if you had its own specialized experience where the UX was just toys and, you know, the name Yo-Yo and the marketing that we could do for it, the taglines. Our tagline was let's play. You know, we had a lot of fun with the marketing. Now, it all into one brand, you start to get, these are the debates we would have, it starts to get a little closer now to like the Amazon thing, right? It's still, to your point, it's still more narrow because it was just moms or that family shopping occasion, but it wasn't as specialized. And so, hey, look, we would debate this. At some point down the road, we actually created another brand, an Uber brand. We called it Familyhood.
Sorry, you created another brand called Familyhood.
We did. And this was sort of to your point. I don't know if we ever solved it, but Familyhood was our attempt to say, here's all these to the users, because we knew Quidsy couldn't be that name. here's family, shop Familyhood. And if you shop Familyhood, here's these collection of websites that are related. You can really get a perfect experience for it. But if you wanted to, you know, in one shopping cart, you could shop across the sites. And so that was the UX. You'd have all the sites on the UberNav, and you could, in fact, open up one universal account, one experience. But at least when you were shopping, you were the categories were really pure.
You know, versus Amazon. That allowed you to do like Family Plus, from what I understand, right? Which was your answer to Prime. Am I right?
Actually, I don't know. I don't know if maybe that was after.
Yeah, I see that from 2013. What year did you sell? Yes.
We sold in 2011, and we left in the middle of 2013. So maybe they came up with this Familyhood we had come up with. Maybe we were always trying to come up with new programs. Maybe they launched Family Plus after we left.
Okay. All right. And so I get a sense of what you were doing. I understand how you started to grow and expand beyond it. What it seems like from what you told our producer and what I researched, Amazon really did at some point recognize that you were a threat and start to come after you.
Well, I can't speak to exactly what they thought or what didn't. All I know is that in 20, I'm trying to get my dates right, in 2010, you started to see Amazon play a little bit more aggressively. And I remember one day they decided, or I saw, 30% off diapers and wipes. It was something called subscribe and save for 30% off. And, you know, just for some kind of perspective, 30% off diapers and wipes is an extraordinary discount given the low margins that these products are. It would be, you know, cheaper than anywhere else by an order of magnitude. And so when we saw that, we didn't know how to think about it. And one thing led to another, and then they wound up launching Amazon Mom and making that 30% discount permanent. And the only thing, you know, we thought was, obviously we're onto something, you know, we're getting extraordinary traction. The bigger play here wasn't about diapers and wipes. This was about moms and dads. And I think we came to understand that even more about how important it is to own mom and dad. And diapers was the way in. And one thing led to another. And, ultimately we got acquired, but I'm not sure what they were thinking, but.
But you did notice as you were changing your prices, they changed their prices. So they were clearly zeroing in on your price. I just saw you gave me a look as I said that.
Yeah, in fairness, that they do that. They, at least back then, were doing that with anybody. And so I think anybody of stature, like any brand, they wouldn't do it with all brands. But if they saw anybody on the internet that had reasonable reputation, that had lower prices than them, they would price match. That was a rule of Amazon's. If you had a certain size, they wouldn't do that for the small guy. So it wasn't necessarily that, it was the 30%. The 30% was a big blow in terms of, we knew at that point, it was going to be a little bit of a game that was going to
play. And they were losing money on it.
Oh, it's not. You're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars at 30%. This isn't, like on a case of diapers, right? The case of diapers was $40. 30%, you're barely break even, maybe if you charge it for four, because with the shipping, if you do 30% off, that's, what is that? Like $13 off, right? That's just, and then on the wipes too. So this was, I don't remember, have the exact numbers. It's probably somewhere on the internet, hundreds of millions of dollars if you kept that going forever.
You know what? The founder of Perfect Audience came in here for Scotch Night one time. He said that he was so worried that at any minute Facebook could destroy his business or someone else, that he would sleep with a phone under his pillow every night. He was like anxious. I've heard people get shingles and other issues. You're smiling as you tell this story. At the time, did it feel like it was gut-wrenching? Like, oh man, we had this thing. Now it's going away potentially. You're smiling even as I say it. You didn't feel that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a combination emotion. I remember there was an article that came out on the cover of Bloomberg Business Week that said what Amazon fears most. And it was this long interview that the reporter had done, but he'd been working on this piece for months before the article came out, actually after we had sold. It was a kind of weird coincidence. But he'd been doing this piece, several months earlier, and he asked me this same question about what if Amazon comes after you. This is before they had launched 30% off. And I remember at the time thinking, it would be crazy, scary, and all this stuff. But also, and I sort of later became, it was in the article, it was sort of embarrassing. yeah, but it'd also be kind of fun. And it's like at the end of the article, and I said, you know what? It kind of shows that we're on to something. You know what? I might have said, bring it on or something in jest. And when we sold to Amazon later, that was a funny thing that the Amazonians would always say.
Bring it on.
Every time they'd see me, say, bring it on, you know, and that was not my intention. But part of it was...
But Vinny, now that we're looking back and you don't have to have bluster, you don't have to bluff, you could be real. At the time, was it scary? At the time, did you say, oh, this thing that I started?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was hugely scary. But
give
also,
me an example of what happened to you. I want to get to a sense of you personally. You didn't get shingles. You didn't you up nights. Did your teeth crack from worrying? No,
not at all. I mean, to be honest, a lot was going on during that time. So it all happened very fast. So one good thing, by the way, is when they did 30% off, okay, we took a little bit of a dip. So our own numbers, it was a little bit of a dip early, and then we held on. So this, we didn't see anything to our numbers in the second month, which was really interesting, right? So we're looking and we're like, wow, we're hanging on in here, right? That's one thing. Secondly, we were engaged in other discussions with other, which I can't get into, but with other major players in the space, huge, huge players. And so we had already, and again, some of this is chance, we're in these discussions with other players where we thought, you know, maybe we had an exit, and these were major folks. And so we weren't so small. And also we were talking to major, major private equity and venture capitalists to raise hundreds of millions of dollars. So it's sort of exciting too, because, you know, we thought we could play. You know, and say, okay, if we need to, we could raise a few hundred million dollars. And Mark's a very ambitious guy. And if we need to, we'll play this game.
And he eventually did for Jeff.com was his follow-up.
He eventually did. So
do you remember the day after you sold it?
I remember, I do. I remember the day we sold it. I remember a lot of it. I remember the night before we sold it and being on my kitchen counter with my wife, and because people ask about it. And we were going to sign the deal that night. It was a Sunday night. We hadn't announced to the other company. I remember feeling, I just remember being mixed emotions. You know, it was like, obviously it was a life-changing event and everything. But at the same time, you know, we had put blood, sweat, and tears, and we were going to kind of, we thought we had more room. And, you know, I remember I said the story on maybe 50, 60 tears I shed that night. And so I do remember that night pretty clearly.
Did you get to do anything to just celebrate it? Before we move on to what you did next in business, did you do something to celebrate? Did you go off on a vacation? Did you finally, shed the car that you were keeping since you were in high school? I don't know your lifestyle, but did you do anything?
Weirdly, I don't remember. I don't think I did some big purchase. Maybe I'm forgetting something.
That still says something.
Yeah. You know, later we had a big family vacation. My parents and brother, we all went to Italy. I remember that. I think it was the next summer, and that was a pretty expensive trip. I remember.
Them all, and it was your time to just sit. Do you feel like, oh, man, mom and dad, look, I made something of myself?
Yeah. You know, my brother, as you said, he's a huge success. So I felt it was some validation. And by the way, they were investors, my brother and my parents and a lot of family. So I felt like they did well and we did well. So it was, that was really gratifying.
Yeah. If I put your last name into Google, I was just checking. Your brother comes up, Preet Bharara. He is the former United States Attorney for Southern District of New York, was famous when Donald Trump fired him pretty quickly. And now he has a podcast on cafe.com, your network, which I'll talk about in a moment. First, I should tell people really quickly, when you were talking about spreadsheets, how Mark has that love, I used to have that love and I thought I was great at spreadsheets, but I needed to understand, how far can I push my spending at my company? How can I grow my company to full capacity? And I realized I'm the only finance person here at Mixergy. So I went to TopTal, where you can hire, they're known for letting you hire the best developers. I went to them and I said, do you guys also have a finance department? They said, yeah, we acquired a competitor who does finance. I said, can I hire somebody to do finance analysis for me, to give me a second opinion? And they said, we have some people. They introduced me to a few people because I wanted to get a real good cross-section of possibilities. And I ended up hiring this guy, Jack Barker. He's a former McKinsey partner, Carlyle Group principal, lots of experience, including being the CFO and COO of a couple of Carlyle companies. I said, all right, I hired him. I'm not paying that much for him. And frankly, I don't think he's doing it for the money. He wants to see, what's the internet world doing? He wants to learn from my problems.
So I hired him. He is so good. He's helping me cut costs. He's helping me spot opportunities, saying, here's how we treated our new people at McKinsey, putting them through a little bit of hell because we know that they shine. You should be putting your people through that. And he just helps all around with an understanding of finances. I'll give you one example, Vinny. I told him my wife was at a new company. She was trying to figure out the healthcare plan and what the deductible should be and all that. Freaking guy, he puts a spreadsheet together for that just to make sure that she knows the best possible option and where the financial ramifications are.
Love it.
All right, anyone out there who's looking to hire somebody for finance or developer or designer, really TopTal has the best of the best people. They can hook you up with phone calls fast, and often you can hire within a day or two. Go check out the special URL where you're going to get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours, in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. That means, really, they want to make sure you're 100% satisfied. They will not bill you unless you are. Here it is. Top is in top of your head. Tal is in talent. TOPTAL.com/MixerG. TopTal.com/MixerG. All right. Why didn't you do what Mark did? Come back to your story, Vinny, from the ad. Mark said, hey, I got an opportunity. I'm good at e-commerce. I'm going to build the next thing. I remember when he first launched Jet, my friend who worked at NEA, boom, they were so psyched about this that they started sending me and my wife these like links to go and buy diapers. Oh, boy, this is like, why didn't you do that?
No, it's a great question. We talked about it, and look, we had a great exit. And when we have one of those great life-changing events, you do reflection. I think at least we did. Mark and I both did reflection. Many of us did. And you know, you should have, what am I going to do next? I wasn't going to go retire. You know, some people thought, oh, you can go just on a beach. No, that wasn't going to be it. But I didn't really want to do that again. You know, I didn't want to do part two. I wanted to really think about what I was passionate about. You know, where did I have the most fun? And then we talked about this earlier. Part of what I was most proud of that we had built at diapers.com was this brand. You know, we built a brand that was extremely resonant with a bunch of users. That, and when I'd walk on the streets and stuff and I'd say, you know, I co-founded diapers.com, like that was, and they'd say, oh my God, wow, that's an amazing company. To me, that's what I wanted to capture again. And I had always had, you know, again, my background again is in, you know, as a lawyer and as a writer and all this other stuff, as people know. So content and media, and the ability to kind of make connections with your audience through that was something I was very passionate about. I didn't know how big or small I wanted it to be, but I thought I could try that. I could try media, and then I could try to innovate on that a little bit, given my experience. And I didn't need the money. You know, it wasn't like I needed to make, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars again in an exit. So I just didn't need that. So I was like, look, I'll invest. I got my cake and eat too, right? So I gave money to Mark. So did well that way. And then I said I was going to do my own thing. Oh, it's, hang on 1 second.
Sorry. No, I got it. Okay. That was me. Why is the name Some Spider Studios?
So Some Spider, do you know, can you take a guess? Did you read about it? I mean, because most people get this wrong.
You know what? No, I read about everything, and including like where Quidsy came from. But no, I don't know where the name came from. I even looked at your job board to see where's he growing into? And somehow I didn't come across the name.
Yeah. No. So I have two at the time when I started, two small kids, and it's not, Some Spider is not about the web. I think some people think it's about the web. It actually comes from Charlotte's Web, the book. And in the book, if you recall, you know, when Charlotte is saving Wilbur, she creates a web and spins it, and it says Some Pig. And Some Pig is the miraculous web that people, you know, the people in the town are like, wow. And there's a line in the book, E.B. White's book, where they say, wow, that is Some Pig. And then I think the doctor or someone in the book says, oh, I think you were mistaken. I think it's not an ordinary spider. So he didn't say Some Spider. And I always thought that it should have been Some Spider. And so anyway, so the domain name and everything was available. It was really easy. So I picked it off. And it, like Quidsy, it's not really meant to be a consumer-facing name.
Yeah. In fact, when I go to somespider.com, what I see is you explaining what the business is and how big it is. And the thing that stands out for me is the number of views, the number of fans, that this is where you're starting. So it seems like the big product is Scary Mom, right?
Scary Mommy, yes.
Scary Mommy, excuse me. Scary Mommy is a show that's where on Facebook and...
Mm-hmm. No, Scary Mommy is a brand that's everywhere. Facebook is obviously, not obviously, but it's where it has most of its views and impressions. It's actually very large on Instagram. It has its own channel now on Snapchat. It gets 15 million unique visitors to its website, several hundred thousand emails. So it's pretty ubiquitous. But Facebook, yeah, it's a big play for us too.
So it started out with the video series, right? For Scary Mommy?
No. So I can just go back and give you
a
review on, I think it'll connect to what I was just describing without being too long-winded. As I was saying, you know, what did I learn from diapers.com, what I learned, why Amazon bought it and why other people were interested in it. It wasn't about the diapers. It was about moms and dads. And it was about, you know, there's 170 million moms and dads in America. It's almost half the population. If you have a relationship with them that's special and unique, where you can acquire them inexpensively and then you can get them to return frequently, and it's emotional and it's deep, it's an extraordinarily valuable asset. That's why, in my view, Amazon couldn't risk someone getting into that, right? And so I don't want to do it with diapers, wipes, and formula. I don't want to do it in retail. What I wanted to do is do it with content. And you can do it a little bit, a lot less inexpensively now, especially with social platforms, whether it's Facebook, social, you know, Instagram, or otherwise. And we use this content to acquire them, you know, as fans or subscribers. And then we get the frequency because of the content that we produce on a regular basis, where we're getting engagements and interactions. And so now we've built, I think, with Scary Mommy, and we just recently launched a dad, this very powerful brand leading the space by, you know, large measures with an extraordinarily valuable demographic. And now, you know, similar to diapers.com, you know, we have to figure out how to monetize that, right? In diapers, it was adding extra selection into the box and carrying inventory and fairly messy, but, you know, obviously a substantial reward. Here, we take that asset and initially, like many media companies, you know, bring it to advertisers, sell our content, sell the distribution. Now we just today, in a beta way, launched our store because we think the brand is strong enough where we can start selling, you know, everything mom-oriented. And it's another way to kind of capture LTV. Ultimately, I think we could create communities around this name where we have events. And these aren't just these like huge events that you see media companies do, but we're talking about meetups where moms can meet other new moms and learn about, you know, CPR or how to put your gear on correctly. Like, there's lots of ways we think that we can take that relationship, which is the center of everything, and extract value in a way that's beneficial to the user. And we can do it not only for moms, but we can do it for dads combined. We just think that's, you know, that's the model.
I see that. You'll even talk to them about infertility, miscarriage, complications, the type of stuff that people want a safe friend to talk to and to learn from. I get that, but let me see if I understand this. It seems like Scary Mommy was a blog that you acquired, right? It was run by Jill Smokler?
Yes.
And it was fairly popular, right?
Yeah.
And you took it when you acquired it, how much did you change in that? How much did you say we're building on what was there versus we're going to use it as a brand name that we're going to create something brand new on?
Yeah. So what we wanted to keep, to your point, it was a very successful blog, which had a passionate community. It had about, I don't know, a few hundred thousand Facebook fans when we bought it, and not much else in terms of other distribution. Now, what it did have, though, was it had, you know, a lot of Facebook publishers don't have brand awareness. You know, you're able to get views and impressions, but the user doesn't even know who you are. It had awareness and it had resonance and it had a voice. And the voice was very clear. You know, a lot of humor, a lot of realness, and a lot of entertainment. So we really weren't playing in she wasn't really playing in the resource game. So when we bought it, we didn't want to change the voice, the brand. What we wanted to do was add a lot of resource. So they were doing, you know, 4 or 5 stories a day, something like this, essays, blogs, like you would think. We added a lot of contributors. We added a news team. We added a video team. We added a studio team. You know, now the editorial, you know, budget is in the millions of dollars. She wasn't paying her writers at the time. So we blew that out, put a lot of marketing into it. You know, there was no Instagram. We have 1 million Instagram followers now, right? We have 10 million monthly uniques on Snapchat. So
Wait, how much on Snapchat?
10 million uniques a month on Snapchat.
Wow. Okay.
So Snapchat's been large for us. So I didn't want to, just to answer your question, we didn't change the spirit of the brand. The brand, I think, was spot on. What we've done is add, again, selection, if another way to put it, like more stuff.
So when I look at the shop as it's open today, we're recording this when it's still in beta. A lot of it is the type of stuff that like a Casey Neistat and other video influencer would have, t-shirts and bags and mugs. This is the beginning. Your vision for it, for the shop version, which is shop.scarymommy.com, is what?
So our vision is that we don't think in the market there is a specialty store for moms. Like there isn't an Urban Outfitters, a Toys R Us for moms, right? You know, the closest thing I guess would be Target. So our view is that consistent with our voice, and our voice is very entertaining. It's very, you know, mom centric. It's very about honoring mom, that when you need a delight, a gift, something for yourself, because you're always buying stuff for your kids, this is the place for you. And so, yeah, it's going to be apparel, accessories, home, gift. You're seeing some of our expressions on there. We'll add to that. But then ultimately, if we get this right and we can get the traction, the audience, and we can add a marketplace to it. And now we can curate what we think is the best of, especially female-centric, mom-centric entrepreneurs and brands, and bring them to our users without having to take inventory. And you can really see, I think, you know, this sort of mom specialty store at scale that I think, you know, and then you can even see pop-ups, the whole thing, that big, bright logo.
Pop-up stores, not pop-ups on the web.
Yeah.
Pop-up stores. So the stuff that moms would buy, they could buy from your marketplace. They have a brand or marketplace that they have an affinity towards. And you're thinking you're going to do the shipping, not the stores like on Etsy, right?
I think we would have our own, you know, so the stuff you're seeing today, and it's very beta. Like I said, we haven't done any promotion or anything like that. This is our own products, right? This is, you know, you're going to know this is digitally native vertical commerce. Right? This is Scary Mommy stuff. We're making it. And the advantage we have is that we have this massive audience. We have an incredible design and content team. So we can put design and expression inexpensively, quickly on all kinds of products. That's our stuff. We ship that. And then we can kind of add what we do that to. Now, that's one piece of the business. Separately, I think we can have a marketplace because of the traffic that we have to the property where we're curating. And that is obviously going to be shipped by by those other brands. And the same way on Amazon, right? You've got stuff shipping from Amazon, you got the marketplace, same with Walmart. And we'll see how that works. Now this is obviously we haven't launched that marketplace yet, but that's the vision.
Your brand, your content is just really well done. It's so polished. Like even that video that I mentioned earlier about the dad, and I won't give away the ending to it. What's the URL for anyone who wants to go check it out?
So for the dad, it's thedad.com.
Thedad.com.
Thedad.com, and it's scarymommy.com.
For thedad.com, any dad should go see the YouTube video. It's the number one most watched video on their YouTube channel. And I don't want to give away the ending of it. But you're thinking you're going to do the same thing. That kind of makes sense. What I then can see how it fits in is cafe.com, which looks like a podcast network to compete, not compete, yeah, to on the level of Gimlet or what Slate has.
So it's a good question. Like, you're not going to be able to see the other than if you know me, right? So like, why would I do Scary Mommy the Dad? It makes sense. I was in the parenting space, sold to Amazon. I know that space, commerce, it all makes sense, right? Why would I do Cafe? I'm going to do Cafe because it's built on Preet. So Preet's my brother, right? And so it's fairly opportunistic, but because we have the infrastructure of a media company here, when he got fired by Trump and even before, you know, when he was thinking about what he was going to do next, I'm like, look, you know me, you trust me. Obviously, he knows me, trust me. Like, we should do something. If you want to do something in media, and also there's a mission behind it, then we're both obviously fairly active in that way. You should do it with us. So that is why we have Cafe. It's really just currently Preet, and then we have, you know, Bossom's podcast we made, and we're still figuring out what the next stage of this is going to be. It may not be, you know, just podcasts. You might see some without giving it away. Additional stuff coming consistent with Preet's brand that he can bring to the market. So we're thinking about that now, but that's why we have Cafe. It's because Preet's my brother. I think that.
And Bassem Youssef is a great land too, because he's the guy that John Stewart kept talking about as he was giving him the blessing, saying he is the Arab John Stewart or the Egyptian John Stewart. And he's got his irreverent personality, which is a draw.
100%. He's amazing.
Okay. I think I get where this is, how this is. I see all the numbers for traffic. I think it's really impressive for anyone to go check out somespider.com. They could get all the data on the traffic. Let me ask you this final question. Revenue-wise, where are you guys with Some Spider?
So I'm not sure if I'm supposed to really disclose that. We're on track to double last year's revenue. And I think if you look it up, you can kind of calculate, see what the number is.
Somewhere you said what last year's revenue was. Can we say what? Is it over 5 million at this point?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well north of that.
All right.
Yeah, well north of that. That's not really, yeah, well north of that.
More than 20 million in 2018? Yes. Wow. All right. Yeah. You know what? I realized I interrupted myself and I didn't finish a statement. The dad video that I mentioned, it's the little details. Like somebody drew on a wall with crayons for a 60-second video. And that's where I think you guys shine, where you come into a platform where people are kind of creating homemade videos like YouTube and Facebook. And then you create videos where the little details are paid attention to, not just in voice, but also in design and in the willingness to, you know, set the scene properly.
Are you allowed to curse on your podcast?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So the name of the video, maybe you're talking about some different video, but the video that for the dad that is went extraordinarily viral is called A Fucking Break. Is that the video you're talking about?
Yeah, I was afraid of giving it away because they said, look, are you a dad who? And then they show all the things that every dad could relate to. And then they go, what you really need is a fucking break. And a fucking break.
Yeah.
It's expressed like a medication, which I don't even know how the voiceover person said it to make it sound like it's medication that you can go to the doctor and ask for. It's really well done.
You need a fucking break, man.
I need a fucking break. All right, this was a good fucking break. I really am glad that you came on here to do this. I've admired your business for a long time from a distance. I've gotten to know you a little bit and see how you did it. For anyone who wants to get to know, I'd love to see you do something for entrepreneurs, but maybe that's where I do it. Mixergy is going to be that. For anyone who wants to go check out what Vinny is up to, go check out somespider.com. And I want to thank the two sponsors who made this interview happen. The first will help you hire your next phenomenal developer or finance person like I did. Go to toptal.com/mixergy. And the second is going to, I know that I feel a little weird doing ads with you, but I've seen your videos.
Yeah, they're doing
customized videos.
Yeah, well, ads, I like ads. It pays for all this great content.
Yeah. And then hostgator.com/mixergy to have your website hosted right. Vinny, thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Bye, everyone.